Hello and welcome to Building Rocket Ships. This is the podcast for marketers who care about growth. In today's episode, I've got an absolute cracker for you, and maybe one of the most awkward interviews I've done in a very long time. I'm interviewing Claire Barker, the Group Head of Corporate Communications for Brooks Macdonald, the investment management company. Now, hot off the press, Claire has just won the Portfolio Advisor Marketing Influencer of the Year Award for 2023. This interview was conducted before that announcement, but many of the things we talk about in this interview relates to the thing that led up to her winning this amazing award. Now, what makes this interview potentially awkward for me is that Claire Barker was my former boss. She was a great boss, and she was the person who gave me my first shot, my first chance as a leader within marketing. She's got so much fantastic experience, and I can't wait to share this interview with you. So thanks for being here. Great to see you. If you're new here, make sure you're subscribed. This is available on YouTube. It's available on LinkedIn. And it's also available on our newsletter on buildingrocketships.substack.com. It's totally free to subscribe, and those who are there get access to this before anybody else. And the audio version will also be available as well. So let's get into it. Claire Barker, hot off her amazing award that she's just won. I can't wait to get into this story. Claire, thank you so much for being here and joining me on the podcast. It's really great to see you. And this is kind of awkward for me, interviewing someone who, well, you were my boss before. You've got so much knowledge and experience to share, and I thought it'd be really great to speak to you about comms and content and that whole world, because so much is changing right now, and your voice is like, yeah. What you do is amazing, so I'm really, really excited to have you on, and great to see you.
Thanks, it was so lovely to see you. Really nice. I'm loving your Building Rocket Ships and the brand and everything else that's coming out with this. It's really unique.
Thank you. I guess, first of all, for those who don't know you, it'd be good to kind of get a bit of an introduction to yourself and what you do and your personal life and also work.
Yeah, sure. So I'm a mum of two grown-up girls and a mum of a very young dog. I'm not sure which of those causes me the most grief most of the time. And also falling rapidly in love with Cornwall, spending a lot of time down there when
Amazing.
I can. Oh, what a beautiful place to really reset your soul and just get some fresh
love
air
there.
Through your head, which is lovely. Yeah, oh, it's just so beautiful, isn't it? I'm employed at Brooks Macdonald, which is where you and I worked together. I've got a cracking team there, and just recently moved into a role which I think is relevant to your intro. So I've moved into a group head of communications role, and I think that shows how communications is just becoming more and more vital for reaching whoever it is you want to talk to. And there are always so many stakeholders. I mean, you know, we discuss it many times. There's certainly three parties for any business: internal, external, and then the clients or shareholders that come with that. So each audience wanting to get information in a different way means there's just more opportunity to do things in either the same way and or the different way. And we are, as you know, experimenting with podcasts ourselves, which we're really enjoying. But also there's how we can do more internally on that engagement side as well. So under that head role, we've got the PR function as well as the classic internal and the external relations. And very interestingly, and one I know you're spending a lot of time focusing on at the moment, is LinkedIn and where that channel plays. And it does seem to be a border between social and commercial or business. Whereas it used to be entirely business, there's now a lot of posts coming through, aren't there, around different things that people want to share. But I also know that journalists use it a lot as well to follow updates. So LinkedIn is having quite a renaissance, I would think, maybe more than any of the other channels from that era.
100%. For me, I've been in LinkedIn for years, but I never really used it in its full potential as a content platform. And so I've been, making a real effort to post a lot of content there over the last month. And it's kind of like an experiment for me, because I almost feel like when I'm getting all these demands from the business and other people, like, what's happening on LinkedIn? You need to be doing it. And I feel like to myself, well, if I'm not posting there and understanding what's happening with the posts, then I can't, as a content person, advise anyone else about what they should be doing. So for me, it was kind of like a learning process about trying to figure it out, really, and get some data.
Yeah, well, I've been following your progress too, because I'm interested to see what happens in this experiment of yours, because obviously I know your success as a vlogger and in other channels. And so LinkedIn, it's quite fascinating watching this sort of emerging as you're going through it. And obviously I'm on your newsletter, so I can see the successes that you're having as they go through, which is really interesting to see as well. And I think I'd be interested in your view on this as well, Sean, because we did, we just already said that LinkedIn originally was a business channel, but some of the posts that seem to have the most engagement and likes are not anything to do with business. So I follow one called Be Happy, which I love. And there's always really good stories that come through here that have nothing to do with work at all, but just, you know, it's a well-being thing, a feel-good factor. And I wondered if you'd seen that yourself, that if there's a broader narrative that here that could come out.
Absolutely, 100%. So my best performing post so far of this experiment, and which has been about a month now, has been nothing to do with work. It was me climbing up a mountain. And so I think people, especially when we're in the B2B space, right, we always think, you know, it's business stuff, but actually people in the B2B space are just people as well, right? And they react to the same things that any other person would react to emotionally. And so that's why I think these kind of human stories that might not necessarily be about work, but you can kind of weave a working narrative into it, but things that, you know, anyone, whether they're in B2B or not, would do on their own life or might inspire them seem to be doing a lot better on LinkedIn. And I think it just goes to show you content, whether it is on LinkedIn or whether it is on YouTube or whether it was on a TV, if you can tell a human story, something that maybe evokes emotions rather than just simply hard selling, is always going to, I think, going to provoke a reaction from another person on the other end of the line. And sometimes I think if you can mix the content between, you know, some of the strategic content stuff that we need to do for work, but then also that emotional stuff to get them into your story, because, and this is something that, you know, I've been trying to tell businesses for years as well, where I've worked. I mean, I think it's just the fact that people react to people, and if we can get more of the people on the business side to open up and share their emotions and stuff they do externally, then people will buy into them as people more, right? And that's my feelings around it.
It's very much that culture piece, isn't it? You know, you want to know who you're doing business with. And those acronyms that we're so used to using, B2B, business to business, B2C, business to consumer, exactly as you've just said, actually, somebody said a while back, it's H2H, human to human. You know, people are people at the end of whether you're buying life insurance in your personal life or whether you're buying a product off of a business, you still need the same language. And of course, in our world, we've got consumer duty coming in with a big punch from the FCA. Yeah. And I say about time, because it really is an opportunity for us to look at all of the content that we have and make sure that the consumer can understand it. And that means talking in an accessible way, in the way that humans speak to each other, not in the way that, you know, a business might speak to you. So warmly welcoming that initiative.
Totally agree. And I think, you know, this is going to be a trend we're going to see grow more and more over the next few years. But I want to go back a little bit, if we may, just to kind of start of 2020, a kind of period of time that a lot of us have tried to block out of our lives, right? I had not long started working with you, and the next couple of years from there on in were probably the most challenging period I can remember working in a communications content environment ever, because of the pandemic, not because of the job.
Not because of you.
I want to come on to that, because actually what made it tolerable was the fact that you as a leader were so empathetic, and that was so key for me. But I would like to know, first of all, what do you think were some of the key lessons of working through that kind of crisis period, which lasted, we thought would last for a month or two, but ended up lasting for 2 years, right?
Yeah. Well, I can answer that in from two different approaches. The first one, which I think is really relevant to you, is it became quite clear to me quite quickly that men and women were dealing with lockdown in a different way. Men were going stir crazy a lot quicker, certainly if my team, you know, were anything to go by. And that gave us a real opportunity, didn't it, to connect. Do you remember we did the wine tasting online? And then
I've still got some of them in the fridge, by the way. I've still got two of them.
There must be vintage. Long gone. I can't believe it. Mine have long gone. And then the other thing from a work point of view was, how do you connect with an audience that traditionally has been face-to-face meetings, which of course in the world of investment management, you're always doing face-to-face. So we had to look really quickly at tools that were going to be the right tools for us to use, tools that weren't so complicated that nobody could work out how to use them, but were also robust and existed so that we knew the platforms were stable. So we made a decision to onboard a new tool, and most of the time it worked, but we did have those inevitable frustrations where, you know, sometimes the audio wouldn't work and that was a disaster for a guest speaker, and then you'd have angry people saying, I've given up time of my day, you know, to come on. And I completely understood all of that. So it was a real embryonic process of going into channels that traditionally we hadn't gone into. And I think the learnings from that when we came out the other side was there was a greater empathy between us as a team on what really kept people connected and actually keeping those things going. And then from a business, recognising that those tools and really the opportunity to engage online was never going to go away. Right? This was a standard part of a communication toolkit and actually a really good one for meeting people, bulk people quickly. But of course, warmly welcoming back the opportunity for clients and advisors to have face-to-face meetings again, which was sorely missed. Indeed,
100%. Yeah. It was such an exhausting time, and like I said, not necessarily because of work. It was just everybody was emotionally drained by basically because of the news all the time. You know, it was getting worse and worse. For me, the overriding feeling I can remember from that period was just burnout the whole time. You know, not sleeping at night because we were worried about. You know, that kind of whole stir crazy thing, like you said, for me was a big thing. And I think.
Yeah. Well, you love your traveling. Yeah. You know, you more than ever. It was real personal lockdown, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. But like I said, I think what made the work tolerable is you as a leader were so empathetic towards all of our circumstances that you would have been going through as well. So I kind of want to touch on that leadership thing because I think you are one of the people that I look up to as I've started to take on people as a leader. As a model for how to manage people, because it was just so, it made me feel so supported. And I would like to know your thoughts on leadership in general, but also some of the other key traits you think is important for leaders.
Yeah, I think it's, I mean, I'm obviously really flattered, but I do think that actually you can model yourself on previous leaders, the ones that were really good to you, and then also remember the ones that were really rubbish to work with, because those are the behaviours you have to make sure you don't adopt yourself. Because sometimes, you know, being a leader, it can be a little bit draining, present company accepted. But, you know, there are people that can be a little bit challenging, and you can find yourself resorting to type of leaders that maybe have, you know, managed people in the wrong way. So I always make sure that I treat people, this sounds a bit like dumb, but, you know, treat people the way you would want to be treated yourself. But, I mean, really do that. So if you know someone's going through something that you went through, and when you went through it, you didn't feel like it was handled very well, then that's an opportunity for you to change that narrative. And, of course, none of us are perfect. Yeah. It goes back a little bit, Sean, to what we were saying about in the business world, how we talk to people as if they're humans. Well, if you take a mum into a workplace, I will have a work persona, but I am also still a mother and a human being in that way. And sometimes I would find myself thinking, well, I wouldn't accept this behaviour from, you know, a child of mine. Why would I accept this, you know, from someone else? And so you have to almost moderate yourself into, you know, there's a way to deal with things in business, and then there's a way to deal with things, obviously, outside. But you bring your whole self in. And that's what gives you, or what I think I strive to be as a leader, as someone who really tries to understand. I talk a lot. I know I talk a lot. And so one of the things I have to work... But one of the things I've really tried to work hard on, and Tom Emery, our former CPO, did some great coaching on this. And it's, you know, sometimes you just have to sit and listen. Yeah. Sit on your hands, don't say anything, and really give the... person you're with the time to talk, and that might mean awkward silences as well, which for me, I'm happy to jump into any silence, but it's not always the best thing to do. So I think always trying to keep on top of the skills that are needed to nurture and bring along a team. Now, everybody I've ever worked with will know I like to be liked. I can't help it. So
we definitely share that. We definitely share that.
Have the do you know what, Sean? I don't think we're alone, right? There are very few people, I think, who would be so hard-nosed that they wouldn't care if they weren't liked. So it's then you've got to bring in that thing. You've got to make sure you're still doing the right thing, where you're balancing. I do still want to be liked by this person. But also we've got to maybe have a conversation that's a bit awkward. And again, back to Tom, who I've got to say, he's the best chief people officer I have ever met. He's given me so much of his time. And Tom would always say, confrontation doesn't have to be confronting. And I think there's something in that too. You know, you can sit down and have a proper conversation with someone about maybe something they're going through. But it doesn't have to be a confrontational conversation, you know. So it's about all the time bringing it back. Okay, I'm sitting in front of a person, understand what the person's going through, and empathise and come out with something at the other end that's actionable and that can make the change that, you know, you might both need.
Yeah, I mean, that just makes so much sense to me. And, you know, we're dealing with people who have a lot, you might have a lot of other things going on all the time, and and it's hard sometimes, but you know, it's, I guess it's about finding that balance between, you know, real human empathy and also, you know, we've got a job to do, and how do you have those conversations, right? But I think one of the other things about your leadership, which I really thought was amazing, is the fact that we went through, you know, right in the midst of the pandemic, there were some really, really difficult times where I was burnt out. I knew my team were burnt out from, not again, not from work stuff, but just because of the circumstances around the world. And the last thing anybody wanted to do was jump on a call, but you had this way of bringing an energy to the room, even when nobody else was speaking, and it made everybody else perk up and want to be involved. And I thought that was just incredible. You brought the energy.
You see, you think this is water.
That's the answer.
There you go. Obviously, people are different. I am more chatty, in my style, just in life, and you know, then I think it's you can bring that through. But I also know that if I dial into a meeting and it's very somber, that's not the kind of meeting you wanna be in. And so I think there's a responsibility on us. If we're leading people, there's a responsibility on us to be the motivators. Yeah. And that comes across in any true leader. It's everyone has their own style. Mine maybe will be a bit more bubbly than yours, but there is a style that we both have that will mean we can engage with the people that we're leading. And, you know, there's a great responsibility in doing that. It's alongside leading, it's nurturing the individuals, seeing them go through growth, and then ultimately, you know, leaving to go on to better things. Well, you know, what better accolade can you have when someone turns around and says, thanks for everything, I'm now ready for that next big step out. Always sad to see people go, always sad, but always totally, you know, supporting it as well, when it's the right move for them and a good, you know, will be good for them in their long-term future success.
Yeah, well, that, you know, those are the kind of memories that I was left with, and they're all positive, and I just wanted to take this opportunity to say thank you, because it was a hard time for everyone, and you made it, you know, more than bearable for the work side of things. So, you know, it was great. And like I said,
that's so kind.
I don't want to get emotional here, but I feel like I definitely model myself of your leadership, because I want to be you to the people who work for me.
That's so sweet. And I would just say, you know, my style is built on looking at the leaders that I liked and I wanted to be like. And I think there's something, isn't there? There's this little chain reaction that's going down. And I think that is so important. Never losing sight of the fact that people are people. And just need support. You know, it's a funny thing, isn't it, Sean? But during our working week, we would have spent more time with each other than we would have with our partners. Yeah. And that's quite a sobering thought, isn't it? You know, it's a huge amount of time we spend with each other. So it's really important that time we spend together is a good time.
Absolutely.
Have a bit of fun, work hard, produce a great result. You know, we know we loved it, didn't we, when we produce assets and how well it would be, they would be received. And thinking differently about how producing is through. So, and then you were introducing tools at the time again that we needed, that were really well received and still bring great, what's the word I'm after? They make a great contribution still, you know, to the way we do business. Yeah. So, see, that's another thing as well, Sean. Sometimes people in teams don't necessarily get the platform to do what they're actually good at doing. And I'm going to talk about you a little
bit. All right.
So if you remember, I was advertising for a role internally, and it didn't occur to me that it would be anything you might be interested in. And actually, you put yourself forward for the role, but you actually brought with it even more thinking than I'd even thought about on that role. Now, that was a lesson for me, because I'd unintentionally pigeonholed people. And if you hadn't put yourself forward, that would have been a whole journey together that we wouldn't have been able to take. So there's definitely there's a learning in that, not to pigeonhole people.
I appreciate that. I think as well, you definitely put the way that you did that and released that job at the time. I remember for me, it was like she's putting a signal out there that she's looking for someone, and you listed all the things that you needed. And I'm thinking, well, it could take you a while to hire that. If some of these things are things that I either know about already or things that I could learn about, then I might as well. I'm always somebody who kind of jumps at opportunities if I see kind of chances for growth. And that was my first leadership role as well. And I thought at the time that you were definitely kind of not necessarily looking for someone within the team, but you were definitely putting signals out there that there might be something out there that we could help you with, and so I put my hands up.
Yeah, actually, I read an interesting stat on LinkedIn, or I think it was one of the little meme things that came up, and it said, if you're waiting for a job where you can do 100% of what it lists you can do, it's already the wrong job for you. It's actually really important that you look for a job that has bits that you can grow into in order to make that job relevant. And I think that was certainly true for you, Sean, and definitely true for all of us, you know. And again, there's that women-men thing where men do tend to put themselves forward. See, and you are a classic example of that. You thought, I reckon I can do this. Not all of it, but I'm happy to, you know, learn. Whereas often, sometimes women will just look at it and go, don't know how to do that. I'll wait until I've got a bit more experience. So definitely a little learning curve there, I think, for all of us in making sure you embrace opportunity.
100%. And then since I've left the business, you guys have done some amazing things, and I wanted to kind of touch on some of them. So the first of all, which was probably not that long after I left, you launched Female Folio, which I think was amazing the way you did the comm strategy around that. It'd be good to know a little bit more about that and kind of your views on female investors and how they've taken back control.
Yeah. So when I joined Brooks Macdonald, I went to an event we'd organised, and it was in London. There were over 140 financial professionals in the room, and they were all men. All of them. And I remember, Tony, the only women were the comms and marketing team. And I remember turning around saying, what? Is it always like this? I'm like, yeah, it's a really male-dominated world. And that made me think about looking into that a little bit more. And then there are so many statistics around that show how men conventionally have held the relationship in, say, in partnerships with the finances, in business relationships with financial advisors, or in financial roles. And there's no big government movement like there was for getting girls into science and technology, remember STEM, but there's nothing like that for financial advice. So what you have to do now is look within the industry to make those changes. And Female Folio came out as a part of that, I should say, award-winning Female Folio, as we won that award with our fabulous agency Moorish on the brand with a purpose, which was just brilliant.
That's incredible.
And I think what was really lovely was when it was myself and a couple of us in the team, we started talking about it, and then when people outside of the team heard, said, oh, I know someone who's really interested in that. And before long, we had a really fabulous team of women from all parts of our business, from the Channel Islands, from investment management, financial planning, all the different teams coming together with that common purpose. What we wanted to do, first of all, because we knew that women generally don't think about investing. Now, I do have to caveat, Sean, it is generalisation, it is stereotyping, but there are all the statistics that prove it. This is why we believe we have the strength to go forward on this, because it's not hearsay. And you have a situation where women tend to hold on and sit on cash because they think it's safe, or they'll try and pay off the mortgage to get a roof over their head. Whereas in fact, if you're locked into a low interest rate mortgage, maybe that cash could be put somewhere else. And we know that good investing means being in it for the long term. So you are talking about 7 to 10 years investing here. And sometimes for women, those things just haven't come together. It's good to have a little nest egg. I think a 3 months savings, 3 to 4 months savings is always a good thing to have. Make sure you can survive for 3 to 4 months. But then after that, you could start investing. And we know that we can invest in platforms, price for a cup of coffee a day. And then you soon start to see your investments build up. And of course, investing can go up and down. But goodness, cash sitting in an interest account also can go up and down. And in one of the last podcasts I was talking about, I read this statistic. I think I saw it pulled into a broadsheet article. And it was in 2009, so Obama had just been elected, Michael Jackson had sadly died. And at that time, if you had a pound, you could have put it on the FTSE 250 tracker, or you could have put it into your savings bank account. 10 years later, when adjusted for interest, in your savings and bank account, that pound would be worth 84p. But if you put it in the FTSE index tracker, it would be worth £2, I think it was £2.40. And it's these kind of examples, 10-year investing over horizon, these are the proof points that women generally need to know about and to understand. And that's where Female Folio, you know, plays a part. So we've started to educate women on that. we're seeing a lot of traction with wanting to attend our events. What we want to do next is start going online a little bit, doing some webinars. The newsletter is doing really well as well. And of course, we've just started the podcast series, which I'm learning a huge amount about. It's really fascinating, and fantastic women speakers on that.
That's incredible. Yeah, I've seen some of the episodes and I think they're really great. And I wanted to talk a little bit about that as well, because it's obviously slightly branded differently from the Female Folio. It's She Wolf Investor, right?
Yeah, that's right. So, I'll jump in.
Go for it.
But it's just so, when we did the Female Folio brand, first of all, we thought, how do you get to talk to females without going down that classic, you know, pink and fluffy route? And so this is where the agency Moorish were just so amazing. They came up with that kind of William Morris, I can't see my wallpaper here, but that sort of William Morris effect that... But when we tested it on men and women, everyone was like, oh, that's quite classy. Some of them looked a little bit like Liberty Prince as well. And then they found us a gorgeous font, which wasn't like a wedding invitation. You know, it's just a really nice font, but a beautiful font too. So first of all, that gave us our common identity. But that identity wasn't going to jump off in a library of podcasts where they're already... good companies doing lots of podcasts on in female investing. And so we knew we had to cut through that noise. And so we're working with another agency now, Message Heard, which is a really good podcast agency. And they come up with some themes, one of which was the She-Wolf Investor. Now, I can tell you, Sean, that gave us a lot of heavy debate, because people said, oh, are we going to be a little bit like the She-Wolf of Wall Street? You know, is it going to be seen as too negative, too aggressive? And we were kind of 50-50. And in the end, you know, our lovely brand manager, Joe, Joe and I thought, we probably got the most experience in understanding brand and how it's received. Let's go for it. And so we did. And what's been really interesting is, first of all, the brand works really well. One of our listeners screen snapped it from his dashboard in his car. Oh. And how good the branding, you know, looked on that when it's, yeah, it looked really great. And then the other thing it does is, as the episodes of the podcast are going on, we're slowly peeling away what the She-Wolf Investor is. And she is her own unique self. So, first of all, and it was one of our investment directors, Izzy Gingell, she said, you know, any wolf will have cubs. And actually, being a She-Wolf Investor isn't just about thinking, okay, I want to make money and I want to make it for myself. It's about, I want to invest wisely so that I've got security for the future and for my family. Yeah. And then the other thing about She-Wolf Investor, and I'm afraid statistics still prove this to be the case, if they're investing, because they're more cautious, they don't move assets around so much. So generally, on a longer curve, they will make more money than against tracked against men. And I think it was a Barclays study that showed that as well. So the She-Wolf Investor, we did take a little bit of time to land on whether we thought it was the right thing or the wrong thing. And I think we've really chosen the right thing, both in terms of what the She-Wolf Investor is and also a standout brand that sits well in the digital platforms where it's consumed.
Absolutely. I mean, it looks amazing just to look at it, you know, even at a glance. But then, you know, you've been doing some really great work with the audiences and the guests as well. I think it's fantastic. So, yeah, it's amazing. And I'm really glad you could take us through that, because it's almost like a model in terms of content, how you kind of build content around essentially a service at some point, but how you can actually lead with content first and tell a genuine story. And I think that's, you know, it's amazing.
And I think also the brand piece is quite interesting too, because you're right, content is king, we know that. But you posted something about Investec's story not so long ago, and it took us back to when they were bold enough to take the zebra as the iconic, you know, emblem for Investec. And it took courage then, because it really was quite standout with the way everybody else was going to market. And I think sometimes it does take a little bit of courage to, you have to have the support, obviously, of people behind you. But if you've got that good support and you can go forward confidently, you can actually make quite a difference with doing something differently.
100%. Well, I take my hat off to you guys, because it's amazing and I love it. And I wish it...
Much appreciated. Thanks, Sean.
Continued success with it, because it's so cool. It'd be good to... Before we finish, I'd really like to get your thoughts on some of the overall kind of top level trends and communications and content at the moment.
Well, an emerging trend, and again, now it seems like I'm just sitting here sort of supporting every single thing you've been saying. But TikTok is a really interesting one. I have been looking at TikTok with a view to how we would use it. I don't think it's a suitable channel for Brooks McDonald yet, but I do think for Female Folio it could be, because actually the demographics of TikTok are changing. And it's really interesting when you talk to people, if they don't understand TikTok, and you must have got this, Sean, so they say, oh, it's not suitable because it's just, you know, people dancing for 30 seconds like Gordon Ramsay or, you know, something like that. It's completely the opposite. Now, my daughter's 26. She's just turned 27, actually. She is on TikTok a lot, but she learns, she does nutrition recipes. She's also into herbal medicines and treatments. She finds out about that from there. Actually, TikTok has become an incredible platform for education.
Yeah.
And everything can be tagged and found, you know, and then the algorithm is so good because once you've said, I want to see something on financial advice, you then start getting fed a pool of wisdom around financial advice. So I think that I agree with you. TikTok is an emerging channel, and I can see it becoming far more dominant in our routes to market. As we said earlier on, I think LinkedIn is coming into its own as well now. And people are finding that fine balance between it just posting about work to actually, there's actually more interesting things here for me to go on and learn about. So those two are, I think, our emerging channels. I think there'll always be room for webinars. But we do have to think about how we engage people on webinars. I like to use the interactivity tools. I think it's really tough for anybody to sit and just listen and be spoken to. You need lots of interactivity in there, and it keeps the audience engaged.
Yeah.
An email, whilst it's still around, it just gets so irritating. I mean, Sean, it must be the same for you. I must get 10, 12 emails a day saying, oh, you haven't responded to my earlier email. I'm like, yeah, because I didn't want to.
Exactly.
And I didn't feel like I had to reply back to you to tell you I wasn't going to.
100%.
Like, one last time. I'm like, oh. Yeah, so I find email so irritating. So ideally, email kind of has to be in the mix, but really thinking carefully about that. And I think email, well, let's be bold, Sean. Email will have its day. It cannot continue to be such an intrusion. GDPR played a big part in helping streamline that down. Mm-hmm. But I think that we'll probably see more of that coming in the future as well.
Absolutely, totally agree. I think on the TikTok thing especially, what I find really interesting about it is, you know, essentially, it doesn't really matter what topic you want to talk about, whether it's something that you consider really boring or not. It allows people to... Well, it forces people to be really succinct and tell a story in a way that is engaging. Otherwise, well, first of all, nobody's going to watch it. But to fit the platform and how it's set up, you need to think about really clever ways to get the hooks in there. And so I think it's a really interesting challenge for us in content and comms, right? Is how do we now tell a story that might have been considered boring in the past, but actually front load it with all the information that's important? It's a really good exercise. I love it. I think it's a good and totally agree with you, and totally agree with you on LinkedIn as well. A final question I would have for you, I guess, and this kind of goes a little bit back to leadership. If you were someone, or if you were speaking to someone who was just coming into comms now today, maybe as a graduate or maybe even younger than that, what would be your top advice? Top three pieces of advice for someone who is coming into this game for the first time as a young person?
Well, communications, as we both know, Sean, is a game of many channels. So first of all, you've got to decide the channel you're interested in, because writing for digital, as you've just said, you know, for TikTok, for instance, writing for digital is very different for writing for thought leadership, which is also very different if you want to go into comms where you might be writing for senior people in an organisation. So what's your writing style? What's your passion? Which one of those appeals to you? So once you've decided on that, then you've got to get up to speed with how the skills and tools that you need to write within that channel. So, you know, writing for digital, it is all about being succinct, being punchy, and following trends in things like hashtags and, you know, what other people are doing online, and really making sure you're keeping up with the development of that. If you're writing long form, so, you know, throwing in here the short form and the long form, you need to be able to do your narrative style. So is your writing good enough to do that? Because it is a real skill to be able to write a piece that is going to engage somebody the whole way through, not just yourself because you think you're a good writer, and, you know, making sure that you're testing that out as you go along. The other thing I'd like to ask people to do is, so you've decided on your channel, you've decided whether you're a short form writer or a long form writer, what are you passionate about? because there's no point in working for a company that you don't share either their values or their interest. So if you really are interested in green initiatives, find a company that supports what you're trying to do, and that can come in many different ways. If you're really interested in the world of finance, and there is a lot to be interested in the world of finance, not least of which is understanding how the whole machine works, that's great. Get in, you know, roll up your sleeves and start finding out about that. And a good way to start is always looking at trade press, trade kind of publications. So see what's out there, how people are talking about the sectors that they're in, and familiarise yourself with it. I think the worst thing that somebody could ever do is decide they want to do X and they go into it, and then within a very short space of time they go, oh God, this is just not what I thought it was going to be, because that could be avoided. So just think really carefully. I remember when people popped out of marketing and they'd ask me about career marketing, and I'd say to them, the biggest thing you've got to decide you want to do is so you can do B2B or B2C, right? There's no doubt all the fun is in the world of marketing Coca-Cola or EasyJet, but you're never going to earn a massive salary over there. Now, if you want to earn a better salary, you have to come over onto the business side. And actually, that can be fun, but it's not the same. And it's that same thing. You've got to find, where's your passion? What can you see yourself doing in 10 years' time? Which industry do you want to be in? And then plot backwards from there. And then that way, you should be able to start your career at any time in your life, but doing something that you've maybe never thought about doing before, or finding something you're passionate about and how you can wrap your skill set together. So that would be for people either coming straight out of university, maybe somebody fancies a career change. There are some terrific writers out there, Sean, and they don't, you know, they don't get the airspace that they should get. It could be time for a career change.
Yeah, well, that's a great note to end it on. Thank you very much, Claire. You know, this has been a fascinating trip down memory lane for me, a really pleasant trip down memory lane. I've really enjoyed it. It's been good to catch up. And, you know, I think you've got so many cool things to say, and you're doing so many amazing things that a lot of people will get value out of this. So thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate it.
I hope so. Oh, thanks, Sean. It's been such a pleasure. So lovely to see you again.
And where can people...
We'll definitely get that coffee. 100%.
Where can people, if they're interested in connecting with you or some of the projects you've been working on, where's the best place to find them? Would it be LinkedIn?
Easiest place to find me is LinkedIn, under my name, Claire Barker. There is also a Female Folio channel there as well, which could, if anyone's interested in looking at the brand, and if they're obviously interested in the podcast, pop over to Spotify, where you can see the She-Wolf.
I will share the link for that.
Standing out in all her orange glory. Lovely.
Fantastic.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. I'll speak to you again soon, Claire. Cheers.